I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Astonishing Legends Network.
Disclaimer: this episode includes the usual amount of adult language and graphic discussions you've come to expect around here. But in the event it becomes an unusual amount, expect another call from me.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Scared All the Time. I'm Chris Kalari.
And I'm Ed Vacola. And this week, we haven't had a chance to get a new episode done, for a couple of reasons, but mostly because we've been preoccupied thinking about this other thing. Chris, what would you call that other thing?
Dying in a wildfire. I joke, it has been a really rough week for Los Angeles, for my community in Pasadena, and particularly the community about a mile north of me, Altadena, and obviously, I mean, Pacific Palisades. There's a lot of people suffering and hurting in LA right now. I mean, thousands of homes have been burned.
And a bunch of them from people we know personally that are just gone. Everything's gone.
And I'm fine. Ed's fine.
Yeah, luckily we are good so far. We are safe. And we just kind of wanted to jump on here and just kind of let everybody know that. And even though we're going to end up doing an episode on wildfires because where we live and all that shit, that was kind of already on the books. But before we do that, we thought as part of our update to let you guys know that we're safe, it might be interesting to kind of go through a little bit of what we've been experiencing. Chris, you have any insights this week that you didn't have last week, per se?
What it's like to escape a fire, first person edition, because this is what happened to me on Tuesday of this last week. My wife and I were both just getting over the flu.
Which is why we had no episode this week. You had the flu, your wife had the flu, I had jury duty. There was already no episode gonna happen.
Yeah. So my fever had just broken on Tuesday, and I was trying to take a day to recover when around, you know, I don't even remember exactly what time it was. Let's call it like 6 p.m. on Tuesday night. I got a text from a friend because the Palisades had already been burning, which is way, way west.
Which, by the way, is not unusual for us, which is to say that the Palisades burning truly to the fucking ground is very unusual, but I'm saying we have been here both for 15 years, probably 14 years, and wildfires are fucking every year.
Wildfires every year.
We're used to it. We smell them. It's whatever, but not like what this year is. So we should say that when Chris says kind of not flippantly, but like, well, the Palisades were happening, but I wasn't thinking about it. That makes sense because it's nowhere near you.
We also get the Santa Ana winds every year, which I should mention had already been blowing to such an extreme on Tuesday that my house was basically shaking for most of the day.
Monday as well. I mean, yeah. My house was shaking. I had the trees were slamming into the side of my house for already 2 days at that point.
And again,
go ahead.
Extreme, like 80, 90 mile an hour gusts.
Yeah, definitely 100. In Palisades, it was 100 mile an hour. And we've talked about it in the Big One episode. We've talked about the Santa Ana winds before. And there's that Joan Didion quote about 100 years ago.
Everclear has a great song about the Santa Ana winds.
Yeah, but hers is more poignant about about how that will be what does in Los Angeles. But what people maybe don't understand is that it's not just a lot of wind. It's a moistureless and moisture-wicking wind, the way it exists. So not only is it 100 miles an hour, it's 100 miles an hour of dry, hot wind that everything it touches, it makes drier and hotter.
Yes.
So that's why it's impossible on night one, which you're about to get into, or night one of the Palisades, then the Eaton fire, which you're about to get into, to literally even fight the fire. I'm sure you're seeing, quite honestly, a lot of misinformation on the internet about everything going on here. But genuinely non-fightable fire for the first like day and a half of the Palisades.
Yeah, the winds had been blowing like crazy. I hadn't left my house. I'd heard the sounds of branches cracking and trees coming down at various places, you know, kind of around my house, but I hadn't gone outside. My backyard was a complete mess, disaster, just from the wind. And then, yeah, around like 6, I got this text from a friend that was like, hey, there's a fire near you, just a heads up. And I was like,
yeah, you're like, no, it's not. It's the Palisades.
Well, but also even a fire near me, I was like, okay, because fires are not like super unusual. I did think for a second, like, boy, the Palisades really got it pretty bad. And within 30 or 40 minutes, I started getting alerts on my phone from the city. I had downloaded the Watch Duty app, which is like a, I don't know exactly what official channels it's sourced from, but it's a map of fires in your area.
And it also keeps you incredibly up to date on both evacuation zones, evacuation warnings, and even just like fire department press conferences. And like, they really give you like, here's a summary of this that happened. It's a great app. It's a not-for-profit organization. So I'll throw them a couple bones. They have a donate section.
They put a big donate button up because I think the entire city of Los Angeles downloaded it.
This is the like COVID quarantine of wildfires, in the sense that like, you can go anywhere on the planet Earth and be like, where were you during quarantine?
Yeah.
If you go to anyone in Los Angeles and be like, oh, the Watch Duty app's on your phone, so you were here for the Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
It's like it's a badge of I was there.
Yeah. So I downloaded that. I had put down my Xbox controller and paused Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, which is an incredible Indiana Jones game. I'm really loving it. But
enter the Chris Galari in the Circle of Fire.
Yeah. I started pacing around my living room because my wife was still feeling like pretty run down, even though she was recovering from the flu. And I was like, hey, you know, we might want to think about, like, I don't know, getting out of here or evacuating or something. And then I texted a friend of mine who lives like a mile and a half from me. And he was like, yeah, we're leaving right now. And that kind of made me pay a little bit more attention. And then all of these red zones started popping up a little bit north of me. And the red zones are like the level 3 go. So on the Watch Duty app, there's red zones and yellow zones. So the yellow zone, if you're in a yellow zone, it's like, be prepared to leave at a moment's notice. And the red zone is, you are now leaving.
It's also mandatory by the city. You can't be here.
Yeah.
Both for your safety and impeding firefighters being able to do their jobs.
And those, so this fire had started in Eaton Canyon, which has become one of my favorite places in Pasadena.
You've talked about it on the show.
I walked there. It's like, it was like a sanctuary and a haven for me. So I know how close it is. I mean, it's when I do my walks up there, I go once or twice a week because it is a long walk. It's like, you know, maybe 2 to 2.5 miles to get there, but I walk there, so it's close enough in my mind that I was like, oh boy, that's a pretty close fire. And then the red zones filled up 95% of my walk quickly.
Yeah.
And then that's when I was like, okay, I think we're gonna have to go. So I called Ed and he said we could come over, so we threw some stuff. I learned I need to have a go bag ready to go because I didn't. So we threw some stuff in a bag, but left, like, didn't even think to take important documents or anything, just because all of a sudden my adrenaline went up, my heart rate went up, and I stayed pretty calm. But I was like, okay, well, I need a toothbrush and I need a pillow and I got to get my cat. And I had to leave the frogs. Guys, I had to leave the frogs. Unfortunately, or I guess I shouldn't say unfortunately, I went back to check on them and I sprayed them down and fed them. They were hiding. So I do not know how they're doing. I'm hoping to find out today after I record this, actually. I'm going to go back.
See if it's frog minus mode.
See if it's frog minus mode. But yeah, I had to leave everything really quickly. And it wasn't until, you know, a day after that I really started going through everything in my head and being like, oh, I guess I'd lose that. I guess I'd lose that. I guess I'd lose that.
And that, by the way, a day after is also when we started to hear from friends who were like, I lost that. I lost I lost that. And so, yeah, and your house is so close to where all these people who were getting texts from being like, yes, my wife and my kids are alive, but everything's gone. And that was no exaggeration, like some of those are a mile from you.
Well, and then when I actually did finally, you know, I got my wife in the car, we remembered to take the car seat just in case she went to labor and we had to go to the hospital and bring a baby home. We had to remember the car seat because they don't let you leave the hospital if you don't have a car seat. And so leaving my neighborhood was one of the craziest. I felt like I was in War of the Worlds or the Spielberg's War of the Worlds or something. Like, there were people driving every which way. So I backed out of my driveway. The winds are still absolutely just roaring.
Which is why, like, you're like, oh, Eaton Canyon's on fire, wacky. And then 30 minutes later, you're like, 3 miles of homes have burned down. Because, yeah, that wind was like, let's go, fire, let's bring this shit.
Yeah, and so I pulled out of my driveway, and immediately I could see the hills behind my house or the mountain behind my house on fire. like Mordor style giant wall, because it's dark now, so all I'm seeing is a giant wall of flame seemingly like in the sky. And then we drove down the street to the way we usually leave the neighborhood, and there was a tree across the road, so we couldn't leave that way. So I had turned around, went back up the street, and now I'm looking kind of down left and right around me to see which way to go, and I'm seeing people like running out of their homes, cars just every which way. Like, it really felt like a disaster movie. And then, you know, we did find a way out of the neighborhood, but then even getting to the highway, there were trees down across major roads. And when we got on the 210, there were trees in the road in the 210.
You're on the highway. 210 is the highway.
So it was, I mean, you know, it was nerve wracking. It was really kind of intense. And I always thought that it would be an earthquake that would really scar me first. But it was a fire, a very fast moving fire. Anyway, all that to say, you know, I'm safe. My house is safe. Everything's safe. We put a link up on the Facebook group for a California fire donation fund. I would encourage you, if you can. I know everyone is spread so thin these days.
I don't want to say it as a joke, but I actually can't even imagine the influx of GoFundMes that are about to hit our friend groups. That it's unfortunately, it's going to be like how it's like, oh, you shouldn't have voted for that third party candidate because it like watered down the other. It's going to be like that, whereas we're going to get so many GoFundMes that we can only give everyone a buck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's going to be bad. It's going to be really hard for some of these communities to dig out. And, you know, even just the economic impact on Los Angeles of trying to, because the Palisades and the Eaton Fire were two of the big ones, but there's been probably another dozen fires that have started since then. Yeah. And
the Hollywood Hills fire was closest to me. And I was like, damn it, I'm supposed to be the safe spot for Chris.
The Hollywood Hills fire started and was put out within a few hours. But I mean, most of these other fires didn't do the same amount of damage, but there's still homes burned all over the city.
The nice thing about the Hollywood Hills fire is that was the first night we had air support.
Yeah.
It was the first night they were actually, the winds had died down enough that they can get shit up there. Then like 12, 13 hours, they kicked that fire's ass.
Yeah.
In a way that like Palisades and Eaton were already at tens of thousands of acres, so hot, fueled by all that. Like, yeah, we're hitting them with air support now, but there's just such an area where Sunset, thank God, the Sunset Fire, which is closest to me and closest to a lot of straight up like where people live.
That fire, the Sunset Fire, which if you weren't following along in real time, you probably haven't even heard about. There was a moment on Wednesday night where a fire lit in the Hollywood Hills above Sunset Boulevard within striking distance of like the Laugh Factory and Chateau Marmont and, you know,
West Hollywood, full neighborhoods of just living people.
That if it had been Tuesday night and not Wednesday night, I mean, Ed and I kept joking about this because we were like, there's no way, it's not the 1910s. Like, you can't burn down a whole city because there's flame retardants and not every building's going to catch fire. They're not all made of wood and straw. But like, if the winds had been kicking up and they couldn't have gotten helicopters up to put out the Hollywood fire, that would have been really, really bad because it's so dense. There's so many people.
So many people. And specifically where they were putting up the mandatory evacuations, there are roads that are already, when on the best of days, so traffic clogged.
Yeah.
And it bottlenecks in like three spots there to get onto the highway. The evacuation would have been.
Well, yeah, that was one of those. We saw the evacuation orders go out and they, you know,
it was within minutes.
Within minutes of the fire being reported, they put out a mandatory evacuation order for a large portion of the Hollywood Hills, which is one of those things where it's damned if you do, damned if you don't.
They knew it was going to take 5 hours. There's only two roads in and out of that fucking place.
Yeah, so it takes so long to get in and out of there when there's traffic that I think they just figured, let's evacuate everybody so that if the fire spreads, we've got people on the way out. But also, I mean, if the fire really had spread, it would have just cooked people in their cars.
Oh, yeah. Which is why people left the cars in the Palisades, right in the street, which was a request by law enforcement, and yet the news played that up as like selfish people just left their cars in the streets.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm glad. It's funny, you know, people were reaching out well after the Sunset Fire had been contained, being like, oh my God, it's getting worse. And I'm like, that fire is not a problem anymore. But as far as the fear factory that is mass media, of course they're going to go with the one that shows the Hollywood fucking sign on fire and play that as much as they can, which if I'm the city of Los Angeles, I'd also be like, I don't care what you need to do. Put out the Hollywood Hills fire, because you show a picture of Altadena on fire, it's nothing you can run with. You show a picture of some of the most famous Los Angeles icons on fire, that looks bad.
To be clear, the Hollywood sign did not catch fire.
No, but there's pictures of the fires behind it.
No, I know, but if you there were images of it on fire going around.
Oh, really?
That were AI generated.
I'm so sick and tired of this fucking world.
Yeah.
And we're not even going to get into my like 5 minutes on Twitter.
Yeah.
So like that was some of the most disgusting things I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. It was all bad. It was all very stressful.
We'll save that for the full wildfires episode.
Yeah, we are going to do a full wildfires episode. But this is just sort of our check-in with you guys, our boots on the ground update. And
we felt we had to check in because, you know, so many people have reached out that we don't know to check in on our well-being. And, we really appreciate that. Everyone just being like, oh, we know you guys record in LA. Are you guys okay? Is there anything we can do? Obviously, nothing you can do, but it was nice to hear from so many people that we felt that, you know, we should probably let people know we're okay.
Yeah.
For now. I mean, I hate to say for now. I know you're still trying to get back to your house. And Chris also can't go back to his house because he can't use the water there.
The water got polluted during the... They rerouted something to give the firefighters more water. And then that somehow ended up polluting. Like, it let ash and stuff into the main drinking water source somehow.
Well, it's not somehow. It's just they weren't... by virtue of rerouting, now the water that's sitting there didn't go through any of our facilities that clean things.
Right. So until the fire is contained, I may not be able to clean, cook, drink.
Shower.
They were like, you can shower, but you can't let the water
get in your mouth,
eyes, or... like on your face.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, I'm not going to be showering then.
Showers here. It's fine.
I shower here. It's fine. But yeah, it's crazy. It's a hell of a way to start the year.
I saw somebody post something that was like a meme or whatever that was like, I would like to unsubscribe from 2025. I tried the first 7-day free trial and I've decided this isn't for me or whatever. I tried the 7-day free trial and I'm out.
And I would also just like to say, I mean, as two members of the Hollywood creative community, I think it's more important than ever, especially with a lot of the stuff out there, the media, like so much of LA, so much of Altadena, especially so much of so many of these areas.
Regular working class people.
It's just regular working class people.
I would say 90% of Los Angeles, yet the news makes it seem like, oh, it's just a bunch of millionaire actors that live here.
Well, it's because everything's, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And if it's famous, it's heinous or something. I don't know.
All the local news has been really good. It's been really informative and helpful. And not fear-mongery or anything, but then when you turn on some of the national news, it gets a little grosser. But then when you go to international news, every single article was like, J-Lo lost their home. It was all celebrity-based.
Yeah.
Like and when you go, like, the further you leave the ring of like people who actually know what Los Angeles is, it kind of gets weirdly more muddled.
Well, it's a brutal time for this city. Like, it's... production has been
halted.
A downturn for... production now has been halted, but...
Different halts for, like you said, the downturn.
Yeah, really since COVID, it has just been one thing after another for...
Regular people. Kept getting rich and actually richer than they've ever been since COVID. But for regular people, it's been tough here.
Yeah, and now the rental market's probably going to get fucked up again.
BlackRock will probably buy the Palisades. Because for the first time since the inception of Los Angeles,
there's nothing there.
It's just completely when's the last time they've had this many miles of
open
unoccupied
coastline.
Waterfront property?
Yeah.
Like this should have been Lex Luthor's plan.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy.
Well, because what's really shitty is, you know, some people will probably want to rebuild because they're going to feel like that's my home and I want to live there. And if I have the resources, I'll rebuild and I'll live there. But most people... or lots of people, I think, are probably going to be hesitant to move into an area that is gone and does get wildfires on a regular basis. It feels very risky. So what you're going to end up with is a BlackRock or somebody buying this as investment property. They're going to hang on to it for 10 years, build nothing because no one's going to want to live there. And then
also because all the places that also burnt down were the places you would have gone. Like the Palisades, guys, it's gone.
Yeah.
But in the way that much of Altadena is gone, like the Real Inn, like all these places we've gone and eaten and done things, the downtown area, all the shops, like, yeah, I'm going to build a house, but there's nowhere to go once I get here.
Yeah. So, you know, I obviously don't know, but I suspect somebody's going to buy up all that land and sit on it for at least a couple of years until the memory of this has faded and they can start rebuilding in earnest.
I think there's also something to be said that a lot of people don't know, that Malibu,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of right there with the Palisades, it was just a hippie commune. you know, in the 60s.
Yes.
And so to this day, there's still kind of just one road in and out. It's a very inconvenient place to live. It's gorgeous. But because of that, a lot of the property that was purchased there, which is worth $10, $12, $14 million, was purchased for $60,000. No exaggeration.
Yeah.
And so if you're someone who's been sitting on that property, if you're 76 years old right now, and now you unfortunately had to evacuate.
Yeah. Someone's going to try to swoop in and buy it from you for nothing.
Not even nothing. They'll still give them. Maybe they didn't sell their property for $8 million because they're still sitting on the Pacific Ocean in the best spot in a place that they've always loved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's just going to be like, yeah, give me the $8 million for the plot of land. I'm too old to rebuild this. Sure. I'm too old to do anything with. And that's how you're going to also end up with a lot of that property. Because it wasn't 30-year-olds living down there.
When? Now?
Yeah, property owners, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. No, correct.
And the people who were old enough to own property down there bought it at a pretty good fucking price. So I can see how, you know, too old to redo this. Give me all that money. I'll give it to my kids or whatever. But
yeah, I worry that this is going to be one more nail in the LA entertainment community coffin, because if a lot of the people, you know, look, a lot of the rich and famous people who lived in the Palisades have the ability to go anywhere. And I don't know what's going on. I'm projecting, I'm speculating. This is my fear talking. But, you know, if Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, Adam Sandler, all those people decide, fuck it, we're not living here anymore. We're going to go live in Austin, or we're going to go live somewhere that won't burn down or whatever. Yeah. It's going to be one more reason, maybe in a good way for some people, but it's going to be one more reason that's like, well, why is Hollywood in Los Angeles? Like, what's the point if no one lives there? Dogs don't live there.
And there was a reason when they started, because of the year-round sunlight, and originally sound stages were made of glass and all that stuff.
So on one hand, you know, part of me is hopeful that, hey, if a lot of those people leave for literally greener pastures, that maybe that might see the loosening of the centralization of the entertainment industry, and we might see a more decentralized entertainment industry where you have production hubs all over the country and you can kind of choose where you want to live. If you're in production, or if you're writing television, or if you're writing movies or directing, whatever you're doing, like, you might not have to live in LA as much. But I also fear that, you know, that change is going to come with some steep repercussions for the economy of Los Angeles.
Well, they've already removed so much. They've taken so much production to Georgia and Louisiana and everything, and or England or Australia, that we've already felt a lot of that to begin with. But also, in terms of people wanting to live somewhere else because it's safer, I don't buy that. I mean, we saw this in New York City during COVID, where everyone was like, safe. I'm out of here. 3 years later, everyone came back. Not necessarily the businesses, because the leasing of the commercial properties was too expensive when people worked remotely. But like, people came right back because they went to New Jersey. They went to fucking anywhere else. And they were like, fuck, I'm bored. I'm going back. No ding on those other places. And people raise families and love their lives there. But I think if someone who was like drawn to New York City, when you leave it, you really feel a void in your life. And so they went back. And I feel like that will be with LA too. If anyone leaves because of fear-based stuff, they'll be back in 3 years when they realize that it rains other places.
But here's the question. Does anyone really feel a void when they leave LA the way they do when they leave New York? Because
It's not up all night.
That's true. I don't know.
Although what's fucked up about this whole fire, for you in particular, is that you're someone, and it's really fucked up because I've heard this so many times from people who live in Altadena, is you were like, man, moving to Pasadena was a game changer for you. You did feel a sense of community you didn't feel when we were in your last part of town. You loved the vibe. You loved the mountains. You liked the little park across the street, and it was families, and it's all this shit. And then it's like immediately taken away from you, which goes even more so for my friends who live in, who like owned in Altadena and lost everything, like really lost everything. But they, and Altadena is very close to Pasadena, and they talk the same way you talk about Pasadena, which is like, I was whatever on LA until I moved to Altadena, and it was like, I'll never leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it really,
now everyone has to leave. But
it's a really special place. And my heart goes out to everybody who's been affected.
Shout out to the firefighters that I'm sure are, for some reason, getting dragged in the media for incompetence. We didn't see, like, we just saw awesome shit. Like, we didn't see anybody fuck anything up. There was that one false alert, and that was the only thing we saw. That was
there was a false alarm to evacuate that went out to all of Los Angeles when it was supposed to go to like one county or something.
We looked out the window. Well, you were actually at the hospital with your wife, but I looked out the window to people I saw in the street, and everyone looked at their phone,
yeah,
including people on the news live,
yeah,
and everyone went, oh, okay. because everyone's using watch duty or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trusting anyway. Like,
yeah.
So everyone's like, oh, well, this must be a mistake because watch duty didn't say to evacuate.
Yeah.
And so I saw no one freak out from that. It wasn't like the Hawaiian missile scare or whatever.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah. I mean, the Hawaiian missile scare was completely out of the blue for... if you're not familiar with that, there was, what was that, 2010 or something?
That was a while ago, yeah.
An alert went out to the islands of Hawaii that a nuclear weapon had been fired and to seek shelter. And for like 10 minutes, everybody in Hawaii thought they were going to die. And then it just turned out to be a false alarm, which has got to be one of the biggest fuck-ups
ever
in history.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in terms of like the amount of psychological damage you're doing to a population for a very... relatively
small
mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, just I would, it's not, they didn't, whoever accidentally sent that out did not kill anyone, but if it had been me, I would live the rest of my life as if I had killed somebody. Like,
yeah,
the
yeah.
amount of guilt that I would feel.
Yeah. They hit enter and they're supposed to hit shift or whatever.
Yeah,
but no, yeah, so the fire, we're fine. The firefighters are killing it. LA's doing what LA does really well, and it's never brought up in the news, which is all these places in my neighborhood, all these places in all these fucking neighborhoods just instantly are like businesses, regular businesses, not fucking CVS. I'm talking people who own their shit who also live in our neighborhood. Instantly, bring your pets, bring your dogs. If you are displaced right now, we've got free Wi-Fi, we've got free food, feeding the first responders, feeding regular ass people. Just instantly, you know, we went there the other night to All Season Brewery.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that shit's never talked about in the news, that LA, for all these fucking things, always immediately, whether it's COVID or wildfires or not earthquakes, luckily, but these communities really open up to their communities really fast.
Yeah, I will say it is, you know, I always feel like, oh man, you know, we don't really know our neighbors. And look, I'm as guilty of that as anybody. I still haven't really gone over to my neighbors in my, like my direct next door neighbors in Pasadena to say hello and bring them cookies or whatever. I need to get better at that. But I think LA, because a lot of neighborhoods are tightly knit or because lots of people know each other from working in the same industry or whatever, it does seem like when push comes to shove, you know, everybody is pretty, they're there for each other, at least as, you know, in ways that maybe not personal in the sense of like, hello neighbor, how can I help you? But in a, hey, my home's open, my business is open, let's go kind of a way. That,
and it's always so quick.
Yeah.
And it's not just the places you'd expect. Like you'd expect like the church would do something,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah. It's just regular ass, like this bar,
yeah,
this whatever place. And like our friend Anna said the other night, she had made some post, which was like, if you're not housing an evacuee right now, like, are you even in Los Angeles?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Everybody was. I mean, it was a shining example of community and assistance and all that stuff. So we're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay, or it won't be. I mean, who knows? We'll know more soon.
We'll know more soon. But we wanted to just check in.
Yeah, we wanted to check in and say hi to you guys. And yeah, just bear with us. We have a bunch of new episodes written. We're going to be recording them soon. And then we probably are going to be shifting to it. I know we've been doing our release pattern the past year and some has been like 10 weeks on and then like a month break. I think once my baby's here, we're probably going to be doing no breaks, but every other week release pattern or something like that, just to make it a little bit less.
At least the beginning for you.
At least the beginning. Yeah. So bear with us. The show's not going anywhere. It just is going to be a little bit scattered while we get our bearings and get through this. But yeah, we love you guys. Stay safe. Stay scared. And
talk soon.
We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a special update from Scared All the Time, who hopes sincerely that they don't need to make another when the winds pick back up later this week. Stay safe out there wherever you are, and remember,
we are in this together.
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 I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.